You have to know who your customer is. You can't fix every process. I joked about things being broken. Some things will always be broken. And that's okay, right? As long as they get you there. Focusing on what matters is what the client really wants or needs and what your business really is designed or should be delivering. And it's not necessarily all the fancy stuff. A lot of times it's really boring basic things, but that makes all the difference.
Welcome to the Your Living Brand Live Show. This show is all about how you communicate your value, how you build influence through trust, and recognizing who your audience is and who they are not. Through our weekly conversations with our guests, we will explore different ways to enable you to demonstrate your uniqueness while we ask them, what's your story? And now, welcome our host, Ben Baker.
And welcome to another episode of the Your Living Brand Live Show. I'm Ben Baker. Thank you guys very much for coming back for another week. You guys are an amazing audience. Every week you email me at ben@yourbrandmarketing.com. You connect with me on social media. You tell me what you like. You tell me what you don't like. And you tell me what you want me to improve on. And I love all of that. So thank you all very much. This week, I have Tim Kubiak with me from Zeppel Productions, Inc. And this is a back-to-back. I was on Tim's podcast, a few months ago. We had a blast. And I figured, you know what? I have to have him on the show. And we're going to talk about don't chase everything, do what matters. So, Tim, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me, Ben. I'm excited to be here.
You know what? We had such a great conversation off air that the synergies are there. We're going to have a phenomenal conversation today. So before we get started, because I think that this is a really important topic for people who are managers, people are leaders, people are owners of companies. You know, even within your own private life, I think it's a really important conversation. But what I want to do is I want to let people have a little bit of understanding of who you are, where you came from, and what brought you to this point. So tell me your story, Tim.
Sure. So my background is global technology. So I grew up in the IT distribution space in a small company in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, got acquired in the early 2000s before everything went sideways, and spent essentially 25 years in that original company and other places in between. I've run small, mid-sized businesses along the way. And then I've worked for some private equity distribution companies and holdings as well. And part of that led me out to, frankly, when you go high enough up the food stack, eventually you're not doing the business anymore and you're just staring at spreadsheets and yelling at people about that's my money, not your money, or your money, not my money, right? I got tired of that. So I got into working with startups and entrepreneurs and high-performing salespeople. And that's actually what led me to Zeppel. So I started as a client engagement and was looking at some of their sales processes, and it frankly turned into a much bigger role. So it was just one of those things, when you stop looking, something lands.
And it's an amazing story that people tell, because I think there's a lot of us that are recovering senior management at large corporations. And we sit there and go, okay, we've done all these incredible things. We've been client-focused our entire life. We build our way up the food chain thinking, okay, you're going to get bigger piece of the pie, more part of the conversation, et cetera, et cetera. And you're right. You get to a point where either you're at the C-suite or the VP level or wherever you are, and all you're doing is you're watching spreadsheets. You don't talk to people anymore. You're not out with the customers anymore. You're not dealing with the actual problems. You're dealing with the process within the company. And I think that that's a real challenge that most of us have, and we become disillusioned. I mean, I left the corporate world maybe 25 years ago, and it was probably one of the best things I ever did. But I want to talk to you about that, about where is that thought process for you? What led you to that aha moment that said, okay, it's time to move, to be able to go somewhere where I can add value again, or where you thought you could perceive that you could add value again?
So my entire career was, and I'm very open about this, was don't ever put me in charge of anything that works. Only give me things that are broken. Okay. So I call it black ops, and I don't mean that in a politically incorrect way, but I ran black ops and skunk works my entire career. So from early days, pre-acquisition, we were building and we were the one nobody wanted and wasn't supposed to make it. We got sold for the most. So when something works, you know, I joke, I've literally had this conversation with my therapist. If it works, I will break it so I can fix it again. Literally, do not give it to me. Relationships, businesses, anything. If it's not broken, it's not going to work for me. So I got to the point where my last corporate gig, I'd been acquired. I left, did a couple of startups, went back to that same company, did a bunch of the skunk work stuff, had a global job. And frankly, I probably would have never left it, except a Fortune 150 company came in and bought the Americas. And in the true story of how it went down is I'm sitting on this side of the table working on the business processes on a Tuesday. Wednesday morning, I walk into the corporate headquarters and they're like, you got to sit on that side of the table. You and your team just became part of the North American deal. And I joked, I lost Europe and Asia in the divorce. And so I literally the next day was fighting against the very words I fought for the day before.
Wow.
I hung out. I had a great 1-year stay package. They were very good to me. I could still be there, but they had 106,000 employees. And that's just not me, right? I never went to work for the big marquee names because even if I was in the meetings every quarter with the CEO, it just didn't fit me. So I went to work for a PE health post-acquisition company here, European leadership. And I got 10 years experience in 16 months and destroyed every part of my life in the process. So that's what-
Well, you like breaking stuff.
Yeah, I love breaking stuff. I literally broke everything. Relationships with children, spouses, partners, friends, gave up yoga. All I did was work. And so literally when that run ended, I had to step away a little bit and say, okay, what do I want to do? Okay, I like working with small business. I like working with founders. I like high growth things that are going to change every day. That's what really got me to where I am.
So let's get into this. The don't chase everything, do what matters. What does that really mean to you in terms of a business philosophy? And how do you help your clients understand that? Because I think it's really a fundamental thing that most companies, they may understand esoterically, but they never live.
Yeah. So I just watched a documentary on Ford versus Ferrari and the early days of Le Mans. And I'm not necessarily an F1 guy, right? I am definitely a car guy. And watching what Ferrari did, Ferrari never wanted to sell cars to the masses. He sold cars to the public to fund his race team. That was his passion, and that's what made them exceptional. Ford wanted to race cars and beat Ferrari so they could sell cars to the masses. Win on Sunday, sell on Monday was a line from the documentary. And part of the problem is people don't know what they're doing or why they're doing it. You know, especially you have tech founders, and it's not a knock on founders. You have people with visionary or revolutionary ideas, and they haven't defined, to use a marketing term, their customer avatar, right? They don't know what their perfect client is. They don't know even who they're selling to. The number of times I've walked in the door and people with advanced degrees from pretty fancy places, and I go, what does it cost to make this and who's going to buy it? And they go, well, this is what it does. That wasn't the question. So in the not chase everything, you have to know who your customer is. Right. You can't fix every process. You know, I joked about things being broken. Some things will always be broken. And that's OK. Right. As long as they get you there. Focusing on what matters is what the client really wants or needs and what your business really is designed or should be delivering. And it's not necessarily all the fancy stuff. A lot of times it's really boring, basic things, but that makes all the difference.
So wants versus needs.
Wants versus needs.
It is such a fundamental thing, telling people what do you want versus what do you need and getting the same answer. But it's not. It's never the same. It's this is what I want, but this is what I need. And how do we first help companies define this? Because that comes down to not chasing everything, because you need to go after what do you need, not what versus what you want. And that comes down to doing what matters. So how do you help clients understand the differentiation between wants versus needs and enable them to get back to doing what they need to do to make sure they get what they need?
Yeah. So we'll start with the sales side, right? Because that's where I've spent most of my time. But then we can look at the ops side. So you walk into any founder, CEO, small business owner, 90% of the time you hear them say, I want to sell more. We need to sell more, right? Or we need to do this, or we need more customers, or we need more leads. And you take it right down the line to any of those things. And it goes back to why do you need them, right? So there's always the philosophy that, oh, I've just got to keep getting bigger and bigger and bigger. And that is public company economics, right? There's actually a lot to be said about being highly specialized in doing what you do really, really well, measuring your growth moderately and being far more profitable. You and I both have a tech distribution background.
Absolutely.
We can sell stuff at single-digit basis point margins all day long. And actually, one of the things I'm doing now with Zeppel is what we do is compared to what distributions used to, 10x the margin, right? And so my whole conversation there is, well, our value prop is completely different. I'm not going to drive your revenue number, but I'm going to drive your profitability. So what do you need as a business? Don't chase the revenue number. Don't chase the customer account or the new logos. If what you need is more revenue and you're not exploiting the offers where you have it, you haven't from an operations perspective, really focused on the efficiencies and the customer experience. Right? Because selling stuff that doesn't go in clean and people aren't happy and people aren't buying and aren't retained is a wasted effort. So that's the other part of the need. And the other thing is, and you're in this business, right? Everybody doesn't need to be a household brand, right?
True.
People need a brand in their segment. One of the hardest conversations I have to have with clients is you go in with a founder. He's like, I'm going to be the next Facebook, Twitter, Amazon, United States government, whatever, right? They have these dreams and they're like, okay, have you raised $1 billion? Are you cash flow positive? When are you going to be cash flow positive? It's great that people want to reinvent the world. And I'm not saying people shouldn't dream and have those kind of goals. But the reality is maybe 100 new customer acquisitions in a quarter would be transformational to everybody involved. Focus on what you need, not that I want 1 million people to use my platform today, or I want to be on CNBC because I grew up in X and Y and I went to school at Z. I mean, I know a lot of guys that didn't go to school that probably made way more than you. So.
Absolutely. One thing that comes to mind is top line versus bottom line dollars, because there's so many people, and these are clients of mine, that say, I had one just pre-COVID. It was 20 million in 2020. That was their key thing. 20 million in 2020. I said, okay, what is that going to mean in terms of profitability? And they couldn't answer it.
Yeah.
I said, what does that mean in terms of long-term growth for your company? What does this mean to your people? What does this mean to a bunch of other things that you look at long-term growth and long-term success? And there was absolutely no answer whatsoever. It was 20 million in 2020. And they went, as long as we've got this number ahead of us, we're doing great. What if you did $20 million and it cost you $19.5 million in order to get the $20 million? And a lot of these organizations does. We were talking off air about these companies that are valued at $1 billion, these unicorns that still have yet to make a profit.
Yeah.
But some VC somewhere has decided that this company is worth $1 billion. And we need to sit there and say, what do you want versus what do you need? We need, as any organization, A, to be profitable. We need to be unique. We need to differentiate. We need to add value to our customers. We need to take care of our staff. We need to take care of our vendors. And too few companies, as far as I'm concerned, focus on that. And the question is, why? Why do you see people so fixated on the wants and chasing everything versus doing what matters?
So I think they read too many business publications for General Motors, Bell Canada, Rogers, what have you, are unique companies. And the whole hockey stick curve upward thing, and we all watch people, if you've been around long enough, like I have, fall prey to it in the late 90s, the year 2000, then you had the dot-com bust and all of that, right? And we kind of talked about paper wealth off air. And people fell into that. And I love when executives stand up. This is about shareholder value. No, it's actually about compromising your future revenue streams to pull in the three deals that made your number for this quarter so everybody got the bonus and got their dividend. It's not about fundamentals.
Yeah, it's about individual bonuses. That's what it's all about. And making sure that the shareholders, that their share goes up. That's what it's about.
Yeah, exactly. And the problem is it's quarter by quarter economics. It's quarter by quarter management. Look at so many of these companies. They change out leadership. The minute there's a blip, there's a this, there's that. It may be an execution problem. Maybe it's time for a change. Like me, everybody has a life cycle and a role. But so often, it's just a reaction to drive a share price. It's not really about the customer. It's not even really about the profit, like we've said. But if you're running your own business, I think you have to step away from that. And right, I can feel the the economics professors everywhere twitching and the monetary policy guys twitching. But the truth is profit still matters. It's a dirty word, but it still matters. And if you're running your own P&L, by the way, I get paid on EBITDA in a lot of cases. So that's a good way to get people focused. Don't pay them on revenue, pay them on profit. By the way, you can pay salespeople that way too. It's revolutionary.
I always paid my salespeople on profit. We always paid them on profit. We paid them a good, healthy percentage based on profit and just said, listen, we need a minimum of X amount of profit before you're going to get your full commission.
Yep.
And therefore, people were focused on the bottom line number, not the top line number.
You're exactly right. They're focused on the bottom line number, not the top line number. But the second part of that is then you get into the, oh, I need to raise PE money. My strategy is to be acquired in 48 to 60 months and, you know, move to Malibu or whatever it is, right? And that drives that weird top line behavior. Yet, when I look at most acquisition work that I've been involved in, it's always based on EBITDA. You know, top line matters. Logos or ability to represent something matters. Customer count matters. But at the end of the day, the real payout's on EBITDA, especially in the small stuff. This isn't the weird, we're going to have synergies and eliminate 40 million jobs and save 8% kind of acquisitions. It's the ones that happen for the guys that have the $10 or $20 million shops.
That's the thing is most businesses are small businesses. What do they say? 95% of businesses across North America are under 100 employees. I don't know what the exact number is, but it's somewhere in that range.
It is.
And they're probably under $50 million.
Yep.
So we're not talking enormous economics. We're not talking about the $250 million companies, the Fortune 150s, the Fortune 500s, even the Fortune 3000s.
Yep.
We're dealing with the average company. And the average company, when it's being acquired, when it's a buy and sell situation, it usually is at a time of retirement. You're right. The person who's looking to buy this company going, is it profitable? That's the number one question. When I'm looking at a business going, am I going to buy this business or not? Has it been profitable for the last 3 to 5 years? And do I perceive that it's going to be profitable for the next 3 to 5 years as I'm figuring out what really goes on inside this company? Because until you buy it and you're actually in it, you really truly have no idea of what's going on. You can read every financial statement in the world. You can talk to as many people as you want. But until you're actually owning the company and dealing with it on a day-to-day, you're never going to know.
Truer words are rarely spoken, right? Until you get under the hood and you're the man behind the curtain or the person behind the curtain, you don't know what really operates and what doesn't.
So when we're dealing with that reality, and I think that a lot of the company people that listen to this show are that small to medium, some very large corporations as well, but we're talking probably companies under $250 million is the average people who listen to this show. Where do we go from here? Because there are so many organizations that are, you're true, are quarter to quarter that are thinking, what have you done for me lately? Top salesman gets a Cadillac, second salesman gets a set of steak knives, and the third one gets his walking papers. And it may not be that bad, but it's not the fact that you've been a great salesperson for years and years and years. It's like, okay, wait a second, you've had three bad months in a row. It's time for a review. So how do we get people beyond that short-term thinking and start thinking about policies and procedures that enable businesses to succeed a year, 5 years, 10 years, 25 years into the future and have more of an Asian philosophy of long-term business of generation versus weeks and months and quarters?
So I think the first step in that is you have to be realistic about the company you're running and what you want that company to be. Look, if you want to take it public, you're going to be dependent on the swings and it doesn't matter. Part of the reason I think the Asian companies can do that is cultural. And part of it is they do play the long game, you know, to use a hockey analogy, not where the puck is, but where it's going. And I think American companies have very much lost that. They become reactionary. They do acquisitions just to pump the revenue, right? Not because it's a strategic fit. It's maybe kind of aligned, but man, we can back count the revenue and we can take that as growth going forward. I actually had a chairman in one of the companies I worked for once said, well, what does company do? And I broke it out before their most recent acquisition and backed those numbers out. He said, well, that's not what they reported. You're wrong. I said, no, this is what they did. This is what their acquisition did. They didn't actually do this. The other business unit did that. So does it go into their corporate stock financials? Sure. But how they reported to the street? This is how they reported. So you can't say they grew 50% because they bought 40% of that growth.
And I think that that's reality today, is that a lot of people are trying to buy themselves out of debt, and they're trying to buy themselves out of a bad situation. And a lot of times you get people that just buy their competition strictly to bury it. And you need to understand, why are you buying somebody? Are you buying it for the assets? Are you buying it for the people? Are you buying it for the IP? Are you buying it because you believe in the company? Or are you buying it because you believe by bringing this company into your organization, the entire organization as a whole is going to get better? And I'm not sure that a lot of organizations truly understand, first of all, why they're buying it in the first place, and the cultural communication nightmares that happen once, you know, that acquisition has happened, because you have two different cultures, two different business philosophies, two different sets of customers. Forget about accounting systems, never mind everything else that you need to bring into one series. And the costs of doing that, both in personnel, headaches, extra time spent, and physical dollars, can be unbelievable.
That's why you see smart owners, when they're selling into those situations, don't take their earnout based on EBITDA. They take it on a revenue number, right? Or a margin number.
Exactly.
Yeah, because it's all going to hit.
So where do we go from here? You know, that's the big thing. How do we help companies change? How do we get them beyond? And the question is, can we? Can we get people beyond that short-term thought process, those quick hits, that adrenaline junkie mentality of look at where the number is today, that focus on today's numbers or this week's numbers or this month's numbers, and start getting people thinking about, where do we want to be? And as you said, skating to where the puck should be instead. How do we help organizations change their thought process so they're not chasing everything?
I think it begins in the budgeting process and setting realistic expectations inside the company. Again, public companies aside. And one of the other things probably worth mentioning, of those 95% of small businesses, how many of them are actually selling products made by the public company? Don't let them wag you. It's really unpopular, by the way. Right? Three guys in tech just put a dagger in a voodoo doll of me for saying that. But the truth is, they love you and they need you when they're at a certain stage. You're their middle school boyfriend or girlfriend. When they've changed and they said they want to go up market or down market, they will throw you away. Run your business for you. Run your business for your customers. Know who you are. And to your point on look where it's going, right? Understand where the market's moving. Understand where your industry's moving. Understand where the spend and the decision process is. And stay on top of that. You can't fight the economic factors, but you can certainly play into them. So if it's growing 10% in your number three position and you think you can move closer to number two by growing to 12, great. Don't wake up one day and say, oh, we're going to do 40 next year. By the way, we're making no investment. We're leaving no capital in a business. And then look mystified and fire the entire sales team when you don't hit it, because they hit 15, by the way, right? And you see that every day as an owner, as a senior leader. And it's a really hard thing to do, is to sit across the table and say, you know what? I'm calling BS on that. That's not realistic. And have those conversations internally. Have them with your suppliers, by the way, that are pushing you to take that end of quarter inventory that you don't really need and probably isn't even your high run product.
Yeah, and that communication at all different levels is vitally important, to sit there and say, okay, where are we and where are we going? I mean, I tell every organization, whether it's a company of two or it's a company of 10,000, you need to have somebody in your organization who's thinking 5 years out. You need to have somebody looking at, where is the market going? Who are the players that are coming into the market that are not bothering us today, but could be bothering us 3 years from now? What's the new tech coming into the industry? Where are clients going? I mean, right now, coming out of COVID, everything is changing. And the companies that are not having one-on-one intimate conversations with their clients going, where are you now? What are the challenges that you're facing? What are the things that you're hoping to do? What are your hopes, needs, fears, and aspirations? And how can we be a better partner to you moving forward? Are going to lose it because somebody else is going to do that. So how do we enable our sales teams to become better partners with our clients? So you're chasing the people you already have relationships with. You're chasing the people that you already have history with and that you've built trust with, instead of always going for that new shiny penny.
Yeah. So as part of that, I think you have to nurture those relationships, but you also, all too often, salespeople get comfortable. If you were sending me the POs and I'm dealing with you and you're in procurement, man, I love you to death. But if I don't know who's speccing that stuff, if I don't understand what I'm selling you's impact on your business, am I a cost? Am I a profit center for you? How can I help improve that side of the business if I don't understand what you as a customer are doing and where I play in that ecosystem? And if I'm not talking, and I'm not, by the way, saying call every CEO, if I'm not talking to people across the different parts of the stack, I don't have a clear view. And too often we get in, oh, this person's the manager and this is the purchasing person and I know them and they love me and it's great. And there was a large home improvement store and it was a person we were calling on right at the beginning of COVID, said, we've sold to them for 20 years. We had the same buyer forever. They love us. We've got this deal coming. It's going to be amazing. I don't need your help. A few weeks later, my phone rang. They lost the deal. They were worrying about how to keep the lights on. You know why? People change seats.
It's interesting. There's a fairly large organization up here that is a government organization, and they change purchasers every 6 months. Every 6 months, you get rotated to another purchaser. And as somebody who's selling to them, it creates havoc and it creates all sorts of trauma. But their thing is they don't want anybody getting too comfortable with any of their purchasers. You know, they don't want the opportunity for there to be graft. They don't want any opportunity to be special favors or any of the stuff that goes along with it. So therefore, the purchasers shift around on a regular basis. Now, it makes the purchasers better because it allows them to have a better understanding of a wide variety of different factors of the business, but it also creates some chaos on the inside. So there's not a perfect situation, but you're right. The purchaser that you were comfortable with for the last 20 years can retire. They could get hit by a car. They could have some type of impropriety and be fired within the organization. And if you're not three wide and three deep within any organization and you don't have relationships at different levels with different departments, you can go from being the person within this corporation to be out in a matter of weeks.
Yeah. Literally, I've watched people lose deals to competitors they didn't know that were even present in the deal. Not even like-for-like solutions, completely transformational solutions, because they were only talking to the same people. So it's not new customer acquisition, but it's also certainly not covering the account fully and understanding where it's going. You get comfortable, you get lazy.
Yeah. And lazy is a big word. Lazy can kill any company because you get to a point where you think you know everything. You think that you are the only solution. You think that you're the only person that matters. You think that you're the only person who can solve their problems. Guess what? There's people all over the world trying to figure out better solutions. And in the global economy that it is today, it doesn't matter that your office is three blocks away from their head office. It doesn't matter anymore.
Yeah, that's your look. The pandemic, that's one of the things that has shifted, right? I lived on the road over 200 nights for 20 years plus, right? One point I figured out I'd spent 20% of my life inside a Marriott branded hotel, not counting all the others. I hope to never do that again, yet I'm doing as much business as ever. And it's not with people down the street.
You know what? I do almost maybe 3% of my business is within British Columbia. Yeah, 3% of my business. My business is in Europe, is across North America, it's in Australia. I have a few clients in Asia. People that I may never physically meet, or I may meet once in my life, but we have good, solid relationships based on the fact that I'm asking them the question, what do you need?
Mm-hmm. How often do you find that they don't actually know what they need? They haven't defined it. I find that a lot.
Yeah. And I think that that's something that you as a supplier need to help your clients with. You need to be the one that can sit there and say, okay, why? You know, we need to grow. Well, why do you need to grow? What are the factors that are creating this? What are the things that are causing you to feel you need to grow? Well, do you need to be grow or do you need to be more profitable? We've had that conversation. Those are two different things. And it's up to us as suppliers, when we're dealing with our customers, to chase the clients that actually understand those conversations and want to have those conversations with us.
Yeah. And along those lines, I think it's important to know when you don't meet those needs and step away. Point them in the right direction, politely excuse yourself, any of the above. But it's, again, knowing what you do well.
Tim, this has been an amazing conversation, and I'm going to make sure that people can get a hold of you and have access to all your information and know how to get in touch with you, et cetera. But I have one question I ask everybody before I let them out the door. And you're like me, you're a road warrior. I mean, you spent 200 nights in a row in the air. I've spent 200 nights in the air. You know, so let's leave it this way. As we leave a meeting and we get in our car and we drive away, and I'm looking forward to those times as well. What's the one thing you want people to think about you when you're not in the room?
That he came prepared and that he had my best interest at heart.
It's not about you. It's about them.
Yeah.
Tim, amazing conversation. Thank you for all your wisdom. Thanks for enlightening me and my audience. I appreciate everything you do. And let's continue the conversation.
It's been great. I've really enjoyed myself.
This has been the YourLivingBrand.live show. I want to thank you for tuning in today. If you enjoyed this episode, please subscribe to the show at YourLivingBrand.live and share your favorite episodes with colleagues and friends. At Your Brand Marketing, we help companies engage, retain, and grow their most valuable assets, their employees. If you're tired of losing great staff and want to retain your best employees, build brand champions and leaders at any level. Contact us for a 30-minute consultation at yourbrandmarketing.com. That's www.yourbrandmarketing.com. Thank you again for listening and sharing. Tune in next week when we ask another guest, what's your story?